Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence. This morning our conversation is with Lindy Ritz, the director of the Mike Mulrooney Aeronautical Center, which is part of the FAA and the U.S. Department of Transportation. And joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel. Well, Lindy, the President's Management Agenda provides for areas of specific reform for government agencies. Could you tell us how the center is doing with the issues called out in the PMA?
First of all, we were very excited to see the President's Management Agenda articulated and come out in such a way that there was emphasis to do these things, because as you go down and some of the specific areas are things that we've thought were important way back. It's always nice to have this validated, in some cases then a push government-wide to do that. We're one-of-a-kind functions primarily, and it's always been critical for us to focus on the bottom line and do things in the most cost-effective manner. So as we started looking at the list of these initiatives, the strategic management of human capital is an area that really focuses on workforce planning. We have a very large workforce. We also know that our average age is 48, much like a lot of the other agencies in government. We've not been able to recruit to the extent we'd like, so we've been heavily involved in workforce planning. We also know that inevitably there will be some functions that we end up outsourcing or moving away from. What are we doing to retrain? So again, it just revalidated for us how critical that particular area was and why we needed to spend time on it. Another area that you hear a lot about is competitive sourcing or fee-for-service. The Aeronautical Center, again, provides unique services. We've had a varied customer base for over 20 years where it's not just been focused on FAA, but we've had Department of Transportation customers that we used to use reimbursable agreements. Now we move money through the franchise fund. But this gets at the heart of full cost recovery. How do you quantify your prices? Things that you think more in private industry, but have become more and more important in government. Another area that we've been heavily involved in is the improved financial performance. We have just successfully rolled out our new commercial off-the-shelf accounting system, Delphi, and procurement piece that goes with Delphi is called Prism. There's a lot of things that will come out of these two state-of-the-art systems that is needed. And as you know from the PMA, there's a lot of emphasis on clean audit and the ability to manage your costs. We're, again, involved in expanded electronic government or e-gov. We have an organization that is made up of three different entities that's come together, our Enterprise Services Group, that really typifies how you come together and do eGov. And just recently, the Aeronautical Center was recognized in a very positive way by being selected as the only organization that is testing the three vendors for e-travel. There's been a decision made that the entire government should move to a paperless travel system. I mean, none too early. I think we would all agree. There's been competition, and three vendors were selected then to go through a validation process. And these vendors, assuming they successfully complete this validation process, will be in a position to be selected by various government agencies to use their system to do their e-travel. Aeronautical Center, because of our background in performing travel for a wide variety and doing it for Department of Transportation, was selected to do all the validation of those three vendors. We're very excited to be involved in this. I think it's a learning process, and there will be significant benefits to the agencies that use this as far as being able to go paperless will be you know, the savings will go from reduced numbers of employees and just quicker turnaround. And finally, the whole aspect of budget and performance integration. One of the nice things about our new accounting system is it does integrate performance and costs. For the last 2.5, 3 years, the Aeronautical Center has piloted our cost and performance process that's being used now in headquarters. And this gets at, in a very structured way, how we're balancing our initiatives and our costs and how we budget toward that and how we hold ourselves accountable for accomplishing those things that we've set out that we want to do.
Sounds like there's been a lot of activity around the PMA, and I'm curious, as the leader of a large organization, how do you motivate your team to want to go work on the PMA? I mean, a lot of management is blocking and tackling down in the weeds, and it's not as perhaps as interesting as new policy and things like that. How do you get everyone focused on those things?
First of all, I'm lucky to start out with a very talented and creative workforce. We probably had a head start on looking at some of the PMA initiatives because, as I mentioned, a lot of our functions could be outsourced. There's a lot of competition, and we've known that. Early on, we've dealt with A76 studies, and we're very focused on what does it cost us to do our business, customer focus, and be able to benchmark and baseline our costs. So what I've found is that intuitively, people understand that. It makes good sense. But if you give them the ability to be a part of that success and they realize they're working to ensure that we have these jobs available several years down the road or we continue to have flourishing functions that we offer, people buy into that. Also, I think what's made a big difference is they feel accountable, but they also are given, because that's the smart way to do it, is to give them the creativity to come up with new ways of doing business. If we're going to change the way we do business, what makes the most sense? So it's getting them aligned with, when you talk about a shared vision, we know what we want to be, and the premier provider of business services and aviation support services. With that in mind, then how do we want to do this? How do we want to collaborate with each other? And some of the successes and the return on their investment has been very significant. And I think then they feel like they're the ones that really earned it. They made it happen.
Linda, you mentioned in the first segment that your organization operates as part of a franchise fund. That may be unfamiliar to some folks who are listening. Can you explain to us first what a franchise fund is?
There's a lot of people that don't know what that is. But if I take you back to 1994, Government Management Reform Act authorized 6 franchise pilots. And interesting enough, FAA was not among them. We heard about it almost after the fact. We liked what we heard. And so we went back through our appropriations committee. And in fact, we were authorized by public law and through our 1997 Appropriation Act. The whole idea of a franchise fund was to act more like a business, to start making it easier to consolidate administrative services, and to be able to be in a position where you could start shrinking that area in government. So they provided such things as a revolving fund, allowed, and our authorities were mirrored what the pilot organizations were, the ability to carry over 4% of your revenue at year end. There's also provision for an operating reserve. You can invest back into your company, if you will, on capital investments. But on the other hand, you have to earn your revenue. You're not guaranteed things like cost of living increases. You've got to earn enough money to be able to take care of those expenditures. And they talk about entering into a franchise fund, but in some cases, just like businesses, if they're not going to make it, what you have to do to move out of it. It's been a very successful function for us. I think some of the original pilots have gone out of the franchise, but we've been very pleased that we've been able to hold on to our authority.
Since you've had some experience operating as a franchise fund for a while, what would you draw out as being the most significant benefits of the operation? What's been most beneficial to your operation as a franchise fund?
Those specific organizations, as well as those organizations that support them, have been able to focus like it's a real business. You inject competition and market forces into the whole way of doing business. It really gets them to look at, if I decide to partner, I can lower my costs if I do this. They can see the bottom line. It does lower overhead and spread costs. Even some of the ways we have done our hiring and selections. We don't necessarily always hire a full-time permanent employee. We may hire a temporary. We may make more use of contractors. Again, you don't want to have so much overhead to where if your business ebbs and flows that you're buried by your overhead. So all this to say that the whole focus then is the running of the business and how you can be the most cost-effective, how you can market, how you can stay in touch with what the customer really wants. that probably had not been there before. And what was exciting to me is this carried over not just to those in the franchise, but those organizations supporting franchise organizations.
It's interesting that you actually have, as a franchise front, you have customers.
Yes.
And the way you relate with those customers on their budget allocations and their allowances is different than you would if you were not under a franchise fund. What type of reaction or difficulty have you had in negotiations with your customers on budget allocations and allowances?
There's a tendency to think there's this magical thing called a franchise fund that arrives with money already in it. And somehow it means that we have no limits and we can take care of anything they want. On the other hand, there's a tendency for those organizations that we already support to somehow think when we bring on new customers, rather than viewing this as reducing overhead and potentially reducing unit cost for them, they view it, or used to, more or less with skepticism that we're going to be paying more attention to other customers than we did with them. So some of that just needs to be proven out. There's a lot of misconceptions. There's an assumption that you don't have to adhere to statutory authorities, which of course you do. Appropriation law doesn't change. There's a tendency to think because we have a revolving fund that you can park money. You're not quite sure what you want to use it for, but if we give it to you, we'll get back with you. Well, obviously, that's not acceptable, and we have to adhere to that very strictly. There's a perception, as I mentioned, that we might reduce our support to current customers, which is very important to convey to them why a broader customer base can help them. And there's an assumption, too, that you'll have more flexibility to bring on additional employees. And when you think about it, you only have as much money as what you're charging your customer and what you're bringing in. And you have to build up your reserves. You don't start out with a huge nest egg of money to operate with.
It's a very, very good point. Why is it important to have CFO-compliant financial systems? We'll ask Lindy Ritz, director of the Mike Monroney Aeronautical Center, when the Business of Government Hour continues.